It's great to see you. Most people who I meet in St. Louis know me by a little song that was composed by the kids in my neighborhood when I first came. I'm originally from Birmingham, Alabama. I was born in 1936, and I was born to a very young woman. She wasn't a teenager, as a matter of fact, when I was born. And my father was 31. It was a kind of arrangement marriage because my family had a lot of Indian ties. On my mother's side, they pretty much, her mom and dad pretty much helped her decide the husband she should have. And they thought she should have an older, more experienced person. And my dad, who just died a couple of years ago, and my mother, who was not yet a teenager when I was born, I stayed together till he died 2 years ago, and he's buried right in a cemetery in Bessemer, Alabama. But it was a marriage that was really correct. They had six children before she was 18 years old. All of the children in that family are Lutheran. And all of the children in that family have in their ways spread the gospel and done teaching and done good things. So my mom and dad were real strong parents. And my mom still is watching. She's really waiting for the end of this day to see how this goes. So my mother, who is just a few years older than I am, is watching me. This pistol carrying Lutheran in Birmingham, Alabama, is watching to see what I do here, what happens. My home church, the St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Birmingham, Alabama, and it was mentioned some in the lunchroom. I was kind of intrigued by that church. And taken by it. What happened when I was about in 1940 was that I was walking around in the neighborhood looking for a worship experience. My mom would put me out during the day on Sunday morning. I always wondered how come she would make me go to church on Sunday morning. She didn't even tell me what church to go to. She would tell me to go to church. And I would go out and I went to the Catholic church. But at that time, all the services were in Latin. And I didn't know what was going on. So I was stamping at the wrong time, sitting down at the wrong time. And I would be looking around in confusion because I didn't understand what was going on. Then they'd ring bells and sprinkle incense. And it was a little confusing for a little five-year-old kid. And I tried the Baptist church. And then something would happen. It'd be cool until a certain point. Then it gets faster and faster, and then suddenly I would look around me because I know someone was going to explode and jump up, and I thought this five-year-old would get trampled because sometimes in the service it got so exciting, I thought that somebody would trample me and hurt me, so everybody would, I would be very careful about the person I sat down to in the Baptist church. I wanted me to look at someone who I knew was going to stay cool during the whole service. But so I was still really kind of looking to see which church would be the place I could spend those hours my mom demanded me to spend. And one day as I was walking down on a street near my home, I heard music coming from a basement. And as I approached it, I decided I wanted to peep in there to see what was happening because it sounded kind of churchy. Even though the music didn't, one is familiar as the Baptist hymns and other hymns I had heard, it sounded like that was some kind of church. So I proceeded to tip down toward the basement of this house to peep inside. And as I got to the bottom, that was a bad step. And I hit it, and I stumbled right into the Lutheran church. What happened as I stumbled in the doorway, the most amazing sight you could see. Here's this black guy. And you could tell he was the pastor of that church. He had little round eyeglasses. And the woman at the piano, you could tell that was his wife. And you could tell that the two people in the congregation, you knew that was their children. It was just two people there. And the pastor stopped just long enough to walk down and pull a chair beside his two children. And he proceeded to do his service right out of page 5. The whole liturgy, which I thought the rhythms were all different from what I had heard. But I sat there, and then he got through the liturgy. But then he got to the preaching part, and that's where he got me. That got you the guy you're looking at now. As I looked at this guy, and he looked at me in 1940 in Birmingham, Alabama, when blacks and whites were separated, when blacks were treated tough. This guy looked at us and he said, "You are very special." He said, as a matter of fact, you're so special that God sent his son to die for you. I remember how radical those words sounded to me then, that someone could love Otis Woodard enough to die to rise again. I thought that his statement was so radical for that time, I looked around to see if anybody heard it. Because people in Birmingham at that time, white people, many of them that I had met, didn't consider black people as people. And they treated us tough. The things that I heard, the things that were happening to my family, said that it was a tough place to be. And so here's this guy saying that there was someone who loved me enough to die for me and rise again. I was so excited by the gospel that I heard that I ran home and when I saw my sister who was in kindergarten and my friends, I told them about this radical place where this guy preached this radical message about a God who loves even me. And I wanted my friends to see it, so I brought my sister back to that little basement. And then my other friends from kindergarten followed me there. And this pastor, right from page 5 of the old blue book, page 15, and he even would have communion with a communion that no one but him and his wife could take. And he even tried to have a collect. But every Sunday, kids would meet me at my house over a 6-4-8 by New South from Birmingham. We'd meet on Sunday morning on my pulpit, all my friends would, by bigger groups and bigger groups, follow me to that little place. And we thought it was out of church, but we could see brothers on cast notes. But if nobody would stop us, because we were the church. It was out of church, so church, a church for kids. And then it happened. One day the pastor looked at us. I'm a Lutheran preacher like I wanted to. I've become the next tough thing but a person I thought could be. I became a United States Marine. I've been in the Marine Corps. I'm trying to tell you about my clothes. How come I'm dressed like this? So you folks, some of the folks who saw me today, they said, man, that's radical. Not radical. I just decided I need to wear a necktie today to be around the folks. So I put on my necktie shirt today. And so I got up. So when I got in the Marine Corps, you see, I was used to dressing for my work. And I would get up in the morning, and I would look at myself and check myself for Irish penance and check my brass to make sure it was shine. And I would look at myself and I'd say, look, Jordan Woodard, you're rough, you're tough, you're Marine. And if someone would give you an order to, you could walk right through a wall. And for the years I spent in the Marine Corps, I dressed for my work. Even in the Marine Corps, The pastor had warned me that finding my church would be a tough thing and finding churches that would allow me to worship. And right around that base at Camp Lejeune, it was tough to find places to worship for a black person. I remember a church near Charlotte, North Carolina. That church decided, this white Lutheran church decided to invite me to worship with them. How they came to that decision, I would love to have been at those meetings. These are people who say that some of them claim to be kin to Robert E. Lee. They have southern, do you listen to them say good morning, and you can smell the peaches and sweet potatoes. These folks are southerners. They are the cream. They're not people from anywhere. These are southerners who decided that there's a Lutheran out there. My pastor had told him there's one of our flock, the guy from Birmingham. He would write to churches, to the base chaplain, and he would say, Otis Woodard is there. Make sure he gets communion. Make sure he gets to a church. But there was no churches for me, but that was this one church that opened the doors and let me in. Let me worship with them. Let me hear the gospel. Even though let me listen at the words of the liturgy that I had came to understand. Even though the rhythms were still not the rhythms that I think I would have put them to. This guy who played in a jazz band, whose teacher was W. W.W. Handy, the nephew of W.C. Handy, who wrote the St. Louis Blues. I played the hottest trombone you ever seen. And yet, inside of the liturgy, when I kept listening, are those great words that talk about praise God from whom all blessings flow, that talks about forgiveness and love and acceptance. And those words I got to understand, even though my rhythms were different, I said, boy, I'm going to stay with it. Because one day, as I keep on, those songs of my past still stay with me. And you could hear my voice boom as I sing, nobody knows the trouble I see. Those songs still roll through me, because they're part of me. They're part of my own. But there I was in my church in the setting, listening at the gospel, being accepted into a family. My pastor told me I should always, always, never lose faith in my church, even though they had to grow. And I saw the growing. So what the gospel was to me was a little more than just attending church. You see, I decided maybe the Lord never intended for me to get to Concordia Seminary. I decided that, well, what I would do is I would listen at the gospel, listen at it, listen at the pastors and the teachers, and hold on to every word. And then when the pastor would give me communion, I would start getting excited. Then they sing the last hymn, and then he gives the benediction. And when the pastor at my church gives the benediction, what I hear in my heart is, da-da-da-da-da-da! I said, now it's time to take that gospel out into the streets where I am, into places where I live, into communities where I have lived, and put that gospel into action. Now, for me, what that's meant is during the early 60s, going to Mississippi and joining a group called COFO and doing voter registration, because my dad had told me that one of the greatest things that a person could do was vote. And I thought that they needed a good Lutheran Christian like me who loves people, who believes in unity, who believes that all the folks who you meet, when you meet them, that you just as well be meeting Jesus Christ himself. And so I was in Mississippi. I got beat up in Mississippi sometimes. I spent time in Mississippi, but I still considered what I was doing, the gospel after the benediction. And in Meridian, Mississippi, one day I was hungry to hear the gospel in Meridian. And I looked in the Yellow Pages, and there was a Lutheran church listed, one. I decided, well, I know they're not going to let me in there to worship. And I needed worship. Pastor Elwing had wrote me and said, when was the last time you had communion? I said, boy, I've hardly been in places I could get it here. So I thought, I saw the church and I called Pastor Shindy Hetty. He's down in Louisiana now. And I called him and I said, can I come to worship? I said, no, I don't mean coming inside of your church, but can I come and stand outside and just kind of sing along with the church service on the outside of the window? And then after everyone leave, could you let me inside and let me take communion? Pastor Shimmy here had told me that if this congregation in Meridian, say, even though say, they're a bunch of fine people, he said, if they caught me outside of that church, so they'd hang me above the pulpit. But what he said he'd do was, after services, he would come to my little house in Meridian. I had a little two-room place I lived in. And he would worship with me and give me communion. I thought to myself, wouldn't it be nice to have some people sitting in there with me? And every Sunday, Pastor Shinnehead would get through his service, come to my house and have his little kit. We'd read the Bible a little bit and sing a hymn, and he'd give me communion. Well, I started inviting people to come off the street to my house. And every Sunday, the group got bigger and bigger. Then the pastor started doing it. He started getting hymns from his church, bringing them to the house. And he'd bring more, and then he brought Bibles. And then it got heavy. He went to stealing chairs. And he would bring them to the house because the crowd kept getting bigger and bigger. And finally, we needed help. And the pastor called down the Selma Academy and told the students down there, we got a crowd of folks after meeting down here at this house, and they needed help. And so a couple of station wagons loads of students from Selma would drive into Meridian and to worship with these folks, to teach with them. And they'd be sitting on the lawn outside of this place. The crowd grew up to near 300. And then it happened. They baptized some people there at that place. And people kept coming. And now there are two churches in Merida and Mississippi. In Birmingham, Alabama, if you talk to Pastor St. Paul, Pastor Newell, he'll tell you my name is listed as a founder of St. Paul's in Birmingham. If you talk to folks down in Meridian, they'll tell you that my name is listed in the history of that new church that now has people of both colors in Meridian, Mississippi. And it's a bigger church than the one that started out. And so where I've been, I watched the Lutheran church change. I watched it grow. In Memphis, Tennessee, I remember being invited to a Lutheran church by an excited woman when I called to make sure that it was safe for a black man to worship there. And I had to be very, very specific. I said, I'm black. Can I worship at your church? And this woman, who probably was the only liberal in that congregation, answered the phone. She said, well, of course, you come on here and we'll have Sunday school with us. And I was so excited about going, I got up and I drove out of the church in my little car. And when I got there, I almost knew from the minute I stepped up to the door, I was in trouble. But she was standing there waiting on me. But when she pulled me into the door, it was like, guess who's coming to dinner? Everybody almost gasped. I could almost hear it. And I stepped through the Sunday school beside her. She made sure she was my host then. But then, there seemed to have been a strategy developed right before I went to church service. They were waiting on me because two ushers were standing by the door. We had a little dealing on the side. When I walked into the congregation with this lady, the two ushers both kind of moved her out of the way and stepped on both sides of me and led me to a row they had with a little red rope on the end of each part of the each aisle. One red rope on that end, one red rope on that, and they set me in that roped off section. And the two ushers didn't leave. They stood on both sides of it to make sure nobody stepped in there. While the pastor from the pulpit lambasted me for coming into the church and causing the confusion. I sat there and I looked at him. I thought about the bombing in Birmingham almost at once. What do you do when people come at you, they hurt you? My pastor in Birmingham said, you forgive them, that you're challenged to love them. I got that from the Lutheran church. That's where I heard that. That's where I learned that. That's how come I'm still here. That powerful gospel that even there still preached to me while the pastor was lambasting me from the pulpit. And later on when I came out of the church, my tires on my car were flat, all four of them. And the pastor, one of the elders was saying that I had to get that thing off the lot, so I got it off the lot. And as I went out to look for tires, when I came back, there were tickets on it. So I had a real heavy experience that morning. But it's not the first Lutheran experience that I can tell you that is negative. But I was having meetings that are positive, of people who once got beat up with me as I rode a bus from Atlanta to Birmingham, Alabama, who were coming from that church in Charlotte to visit my church with me. And they decided not to obey the colored and white sign. And we got down to Anniston, Alabama. That Greyhound bus was stopped. And the people came on that bus with a pipe. I was in military uniform still. And they beat everybody on that bus. And they broke my shoulder. The guy that was sitting next to me, who now is in Louisiana, he's a Lutheran, but he works with the judicial system. They cut his face wide open. And these were Lutherans. This was the Lutheran church still. As I worked my way through the civil rights movement in the Memphis, and later on, when Dr. King was killed one day, I came with him to St. Louis to hide. And I was walking on the streets in St. Louis with my wife and children without a place to stay because I had heard someone would hurt my wife and children in Memphis. I decided St. Louis was big enough to hide. An incredible thing happened. It was a Sunday morning and we were homeless. Didn't have no food, nowhere to go. I had about 12 cents. At that time, telephone calls were a dime. I decided that it's Sunday morning and if I was in the right place, I'd be at my Lutheran church worshiping. And so I took the dime and I dropped it in the phone. And I looked over the yellow page to see if they had a Lutheran church in St. Louis. And when I opened the page, I went, voila! The world of the Lutheran Church is here. So I just picked one. And when I dialed it, an amazing, I dialed it and I said, hello, can you pray with the guy who answered? I could hear organ music in the background. I said, can you pray for those who are homeless in the city and who don't have food and shelter? He said, is that you? I said, it doesn't make any difference. I met other people out there. And he said, well, I've got to go in the service right now. He said, do you have a job? I said, no, I don't. He said, well, if you just stay at the telephone till I get through with the service. And I gave him the number. He said, I'm going to try to call you back. I might have a job possibility for you. Well, I stayed there, and an hour and a half later, right on the dot, the telephone rang, and there he was. And he said, that was a janitor's position open at Concordia Seminary. And he said, I've already called, and they want to talk to you. And so I hung up, and Dr. Wunderlich, even to this day, and his family, figures that it was quite a miracle that he would talk to me and that eventually I would get to Concordia Seminary, where I wanted to be in the first place. I always wanted to be here. This is when I got to that job at the library, I thought that it was more than just a job, a place for me, an opportunity to feed my family. It was a place where I wanted to be and where the Lord showed me he could put me. But then I got a chance to see where these guys come from who bring the gospel out to the world where I am. Because I always wanted to see that. And I watched them as they studied. And I watched some of the guys who are in here right now, some of the young guys. I watched Thomas, who gave the address yesterday afternoon, as he studied his exegesis and his Hebrew and struggled with it all. And I watched some of the other guys who walked the campus. And I said, particularly for the black students, I said, Lord, don't let them get killed on this campus because it's so heavy for them. And I said, they're the folks who go out and find Otis Willis, the guys who get excited about the gospel and who put it into action. This morning, as I stood at my place out there in the neighborhood where I am, the gospel has told me about hunger and how we should be reacting to people who are hungry. Even while I'm talking now, there are people standing at my place getting food. It's a real tough job. You never have enough food to feed everyone who comes, and you have to say no. I have to say no to 4 out of every 7 people who ask me. I have to go and find firewood to help warm houses. And we get firewood, and I've got a lot of farmers involved who see the gospel after the benediction as a way of dealing with that gospel that excites them in their churches in Bethalto, Illinois, and in Indiana, and Perryville, Missouri. And they go out after that church, and they go and cut wood, and they drive it up to my place. And if you come to my place, you'll see big pile of firewood in the back of my place. People talk to me about pro-life. I have people always approaching me and they say, are you pro-life? Well, I want to tell you. And I want to make sure I put this in context, because there are even some black Lutherans may well look at me and have different opinions, and I can never be pro-life. You know, I looked at my mother. I look at her now. My mother had me in an environment that was so poor. My mother wasn't even a teenager. People looked at her and thought she was too young to be pregnant. She wasn't allowed to wear stockings yet. And there she was, pregnant with me. And there were folks who really didn't think that I should be born to her. Every day, when I get to the end of a day, I think I'll write her a letter and say, thank you for that. Because it's so good that she let me be born. Because each time I see a human being, it's an opportunity to correct what is wrong in the world. Because somewhere out there is a baby, I think, that will one day get rid of racism, deal with the church to make the church a place where one family can be. I listened at the struggle going on in the lunchroom a few minutes ago, and my dream has always been that my church could sit down all together and worship together. Always. I see all of us as a family. If you look at the girls who are at my place now, they will tell you that I tell them about Jesus every opportunity I get. I tell everybody who I give a can full of food to in my neighborhood that Jesus is alive, that he's alive and he loves them and cares about them. And it's through all of us, each one of us, I feel. That's how come I think it's so important to see pastors learn how to come to this place here, this Concordia Seminary, and be trained to go out into a place like my place to preach the gospel. I believe that we should have the kind of teaching that would prepare a student to come and teach in a place like mine, where sometimes in the middle of the night I hear gunshots, where people are struggling to keep a place to stay. Sometimes the issues in my church have to be directly tied to what is happening to the folks who live around that congregation. have to speak to me very directly about AIDS, about teenage pregnancy. I got to hear it from the pulpit. I got to hear it because it will tell me what I'm going to do to deal with it all. And pastor, my pastor, who is here from St. Paul's Lutheran Church, and I belong to St. Paul's Lutheran Church right here in North St. Louis. It's not a great big congregation, not huge. But I sit there and I intensely listen at every one of his words. And some of the pastors I noticed today were saying, particularly the white pastors, were kind of nervous. They were saying, well, we do some good things. You're not kidding. I'm so glad that right now that they're there. We need black pastors. We need more black kids in the schools around us. He's given a challenge to go into a community where people looked at the word Lutheran, and when I told people, would tell people, they would ask me, they said, what are you? I said, I'm Lutheran. They said, do you believe in Christ? I said, do I ever believe in Christ? So I'm Lutheran. I intend to be that. My children are. I have seven children. I have two girls, five boys, all named Otis, and they're Lutherans. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah, speak in the mic because it's recorded.
Where do you get all the money to do all this for all the girls?
It comes from individuals. We've gotten money from Lutheran World Relief, and we've gotten some money from, little pieces of money, but it mostly comes from kids and people who have hearts like kids. We get pennies here and a bucket of dollar pennies there. Somebody does a stock hopping and they bring money to our place. And it's strong. I never intended for it to be permanent. Never intended for that to be my, quote, work. If you're doing what I do, if you're feeding people and housing people, your real dream is that one day you'll be out of a job. I want the problem to be dealt with. That's how come I take any invitation to speak to people who are smart, people who have more power than me, people who have been to the seminary and who can go out and make things happen from the top. Make things change, because something has to happen in the United States that will give everybody a chance for good health care and for food and good housing. I think that it can. When we pray our prayer, they said, on earth as it is in heaven, boy, thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. When I look at the kingdom of the Lord, I read further down in Revelations, it talks about a brand new city. It's my consolation sometimes at the end of a day. When the flood of people were hungry and homeless seemed overwhelming. Last night I heard a lady crying at 2:30 in the morning. I was on a cheap, I picked up a telephone and she was saying, there's somewhere for me and my children to stay. And I'm listening at her crying on the phone. That's not the world that I thought it was much simpler when I had the buffing machines here on the floor at Concordia than being where I am now. I hope that it will all go away. And one of the things that I tied my work directly to Sunday schools and vacation Bible schools where I have to go and I have to tell them how that gospel turns into action. So for me, the rewarding thing is that right now, even while we're talking, not only are people getting food, but there are people in surprising places bringing food. Some kids right now who are on a project scouring their little neighborhood over near Kirkwood for every penny and nickel that's not nailed down that's going to help me pay the light bill. Senator Danforth, who was speaking with me on May the 21st at the big rally in St. Louis about pro-life, Senator Danforth and Senator and Governor Ashcroft. Senator Danforth came to my place and he said, you know, you're lucky you're not tied to the U.S. government, to all that bureaucracy. Because right now there are people who told me that I shouldn't be taking care of girls who are pregnant. Would you believe that a few years ago I lost a paycheck from an agency because I refused to stop giving people a place to stay off the street. The agency thought that that was just too much liability. I understand technical people. You know how they are. It's almost a liability for me to give a person a can of soup today. Today I'll get shot. I could get shot. I've been shot twice doing the work that I do. It's a very risky and chancy thing. Sometimes I do what the guy said earlier on the mic. I fly by the seat of my pants. I pray a lot. I ask the Lord to help me. And sometimes that's all I got is a prayer, to ask the Lord to help me. And sometimes it works. Sometimes people are able to walk away from me and become independent of me. But till then, I think that we'll be there. My wife and I last month, just to show you our income, my wife and I last month with our supporting our kids, and we have four kids in college, we made $1,300. That's our income. But I own my house. I paid $1,000 for it. I own all my baby houses. I paid cash for them. I own my cars. They're not pretty. They're mine. I paid a few hundred bucks for them, and they run. I work on them, and they run. I get all over the United States. They're making a motion picture right now, a guy in Chicago, that is going to emphasize the gospel part of the work that we do. They did the God Bless the Child movie, but they kind of hid my name. Dorian Howard acted me in the movie. But now they're making a movie, and it's going to speak about the church, and the church is going to see itself. And out of that movie, some people are going to come, and some people are going to bring some more food, some people are going to collect some more change, and they're going to support our work. That's the way it works. But in the meantime, some other people are going to be inspired to turn loose their gospel after the benediction. That's what I want to see. I want to see a church in action. So excited, even after this conference, that to function this very conference, when the benediction is given, that they're going to charge out into the world where they come from and make some things happen and create a church where everyone, no matter what color they are, will have equal opportunity to the celebration inside of our church. I want that to happen. I wish that it would all had already happened, and all this would have been done, and I'd been back in my job as a janitor at Concordia Seminary. I'm getting a gray hair. I'm 52 years old. I'll be 53 this December the 9th. My children are getting tall, strong. I've had to tell them that the world is the Mr. Rogers neighborhood, that every church out there, even though it may have a Lutheran sign on it, may not welcome them all in. Not yet. That the opportunities, even inside the church, may still not be there for them like it wasn't for me. But yet, I haven't lost hope. I'm looking at all of you sitting here, and you could be anywhere else. And I'm saying that a change is going to be made because you are here. I believe that. I'm going to leave today with that hope inside of me.
What kind of service do you offer out of this? What's the name of
that? It's Lutheran North St. Louis Outreach, and it's at 2023 Bissell. My telephone number is area code 314-534-7455. And if you are in trouble, you call there. There are people who will come there and say they don't have nowhere to live, or that they're in trouble, or they just need a friend, and we try to be there. Problems come in every size and color. Sometimes the people who call me today are not going to be poor. Some of them are going to call me from someplace in Montana. Some of the girls who saw me at a conference who's having a problem in her family. But then there are some basic things like handing out a can of soup or a blanket that I can do and firewood. But the complicated problems that tear families apart of it are every kind. And if we don't have a response for it, then my friends who work beside me as volunteers will try to put one together.
Do you have technical staff that works with you?
We have people particularly who are doing practicums from college working with the girls at my place. We have people with doctor degrees who work with. We have doctors who volunteer at our place. I'm the only person who claims to have just a high school diploma at my place. But my place looks very technical. My wife has a college degree, and she makes me look real professional. Well, my children always talk about the music, and I always tell them that you're a Lutheran. If you really want music, the music is still being written, and you can write it. I said, why did you have to depend on some guy in 1800 writing your music? They still, you're Lutheran. If you write a song, it's a Lutheran song. One day I was sitting in my place, and I thought about a gospel out of Matthew that spoke about how we see the Lord. I said that any time you do something to anyone else, you just as well be doing it to Jesus. And I was seeing people coming to my door, and I thought about it. I said, that's the way you see Jesus, when you see people. And I came this little song, and it goes like this. Why you
at my door hungry. It seems that I would know you. Why you standing at my door naked? It seems that I should know you. In the hustle and bustle of my day, as I go about my work and play, could I accidentally turn the Lord away? Why you standing at my door hungry? It seems that I should know you. In the hustle and bustle of your day, as you go about your work and play, could you accidentally turn the Lord away? Who are you standing at my door hungry? It seems that I should know you. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, I want to thank all of you for coming to this workshop. I was looking at the names on the list of choices you had, and I would have been at any one of those workshops. It again proved to me something about the church, that all of us, has a part in the ministry, and the Lord can use any of us. And I am really happy that you came to see the ex-janitor of Concordia Seminary, and that you would feel that he had something worth you hearing. The church has been very generous and loving to me and kind. I'm hoping that the struggles that people see inside of it are all healthy. I don't have all the expertise to set on the technical parts of decision making in the church that will decide about new senates and districts and all the other complicated things. I want the church doors to be open to everyone. I want one day, if my children get ready to worship at your church, that they'll find a worship experience that will help them to know that there's gospel after their benediction. That's so exciting. That it'll keep them coming back to hear more and more, and they get more and more of it so that they can take it out in the world to make a change. So thank you, and I'll be around to answer questions.